Hi, faculty. Michael Overholt here. I can imagine a day when the College of Charleston community comes together for its own version of CoronaFest, or whatever we want to call it, to swap stories about teaching during the COVID-19 campus closure. I know there are some doozies. One that I did get to pay attention to and had a chance to attend via YouTube's live stream and Zoom is Professor Morgan Kerner's German 468 class, who attempted and successfully pulled off what was several months ago unimaginable, a virtual theater production slash radio show of Goethe's Faust. The only thing grittier than the production itself, named Too Faust, Too Furious, is how Kerner and his students adapted to the situation, overcame obstacles, learned a portfolio list of new technologies, and delivered an introspective adaptation sure to render you speechless in the last 2 minutes, if not before. So, episode 14 is of me talking with Morgan about the experience, its process, and venue. It's a tale of tenacity and resilience that accurately reflects the innovative spirit of our CFC community.
And it was March 11th, I think. That was a Wednesday. That was the day that the pandemic was declared, I think, by the WHO. We came to class, and I could tell people were already starting to think about it because the college had announced, you know, a practice e-learning day for the next day. And before class started, one of our students, Cyril, who was, he's the person who sort of edited the entire radio show in the middle, she said, oh, Dr. Kerner, you know, theoretical question, hypothetical question. You know, if we were not allowed to come back, what would we do? I framed it as in terms of, well, you know, we could work on something else, we could read another text, or we could work on a project. They all wanted to work on a creative project still.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I said, okay, well, I'll find a way, but let's just start working on it.
About that creative aspect, though, because in having this very creative project that the students did,
right.
When I was looking back over the assignments that kind of built up to it, it looked to me like you were really kind of crafting the whole creative process, like along the way. It wasn't analytical, 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 let's be creative. It was, let's create this trailer.
Yes.
Let's create this scene. You know, can you talk about that a little bit more? How that worked?
Yeah, that's something I've learned over the years, and I've written about in my scholarship on this class specifically. When I first taught this class, I taught a course on comedy in 2007, and we did 9 weeks of analytical, and then we switched, and there just wasn't enough time to transition really.
Mm-hmm.
And I've argued elsewhere, and sort of come to really believe that the creative aspect is analytical. It's just a more freewheeling, hermeneutically irreverent analytical style. I mean, if you're going to change the opening five scenes of Faust into a trailer for a movie, you have to make decisions that are analytical, that make an interpretation of what you're presenting, essentially. It's just a lot more freewheeling and open-ended, and the students really respond to that, too. They're still using the language, but they, there's something, you know, at our post-game talk during our final exam yesterday, a lot of them mentioned this, that there is something like liberating about, they were talking about this improv game we would play where everyone had to say, ja, genau, und, yes, of course, and sort of add to the other person's. That's sort of the first rule of improv, is you always say yes, and then you add on to the scene. They felt that that was very liberating, and that in often in the literature classroom where the focus is explicitly analytic, there's a sense of there's right and wrong, and the professor knows, and you're less willing to take risks in a way. And it's been my goal for years to really, my ideal class is one in which the students really feel like they're on equal footing with the author and can make all sorts of decisions, no matter how silly, creative, or analytical they are.
Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, then, what were there any parts of the final project that were like a direct result of some of these earlier creations?
Yes, several of them. The most obvious one was the radio play. That assignment really gave birth to, I mean, everyone wrote, there was an assignment to change the fifth act of Faust Part Two into either a into some sort of modern televisual genre to summarize it. So I suggested 24-hour news, sports reporting, or a children's show. And the final project ended up being different. Three students worked together and kind of created an amalgam of their ideas that they had written in their own assignments. And I also got permission from other students to send them their writing assignments, and they even incorporated some of their ideas.
And Im Fernsehen, that's on television, right? That's the word for television?
Yes, on television, yes.
Right. Yeah, I'm reaching way back in my German.
Right. I mean, that assignment, and it's something I do a lot with my creative writing assignments, try to find a genre that the students are more familiar with that forces them to transpose the plot or whatever's happening into a different medium, but at the same time gives them a distance to comment on it.
Du musst verstehen! Aus 1 mach 10 und 2 lass gehen und 3 mach gleich, so bist du reich.
So, how did you lead the assignment? Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I heard you say from time to time that you had a very hands-off kind of approach to your class. So how did you present the assignment to them? Did you assign roles? Did you set parameters or guidelines to follow?
Over the years, the more I've worked with theater and taught theater and gone to the theater in Germany, the more interested I've become in devised theater, which is sort of theater without a text, where all of the entire text in the show comes directly from the students. So the ideal would be, in this class, the ideal has always been a completely student-driven production, which they write, they act in, and in which the acting is really shared, where there aren't stars, where it's sort of an egalitarian sharing of roles. Not one person plays Faust, but everyone plays Faust. And where they're also directing and making most of the directorial decisions. And when we got to the point where they started working on the scenes, I had four different groups and then one person who was off at Air Force training camp and couldn't join a group. So we had four groups, and those ended up being the four major chunks of the play. There was the beginning with all the introductory scenes. There was the summary of the Gretchen tragedy with the Monty Python-esque animation, et cetera. There was the talk show, and there was the radio show about Faust II. And then, because of the way Zoom worked, but I also do this in class, I set it up. Two of the groups were done first. So I split the class in half and said, okay, seven of you are on this group, and seven of you are acting in this group, and the group leaders can decide who's going to be in what role. So they kind of read it through, and people volunteered, I think. Mm-hmm. Those last 2 minutes were put together by the student who was off at training camp. And for that, I just asked students who I thought didn't have enough lines yet if they would join that group, because it was six speakers for that scene, that two-minute scene. That I could talk about that scene for a while. That scene was written by a Nobel Prize-winning author, Elfriede Jelinek, who wrote a play called Faust In and Out in 2010 that I incorporated in this class. We read it right after we read the Gretchen tragedy scene and finished Faust I. And what Jelinek does in that play is she takes the story of Josef Fritzl, who is this man in Austria who locked his daughter up in his cell for 24 years, raped her repeatedly, had children with her. And Jelinek takes that horrific story and makes the voice of Gretchen the voice of his daughter, Elisabeth Fritzl, speaking from the bunker, so to speak.
Pleased to meet you. Hope you guessed my name. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game.
And it's this 60-page horrific associative text that we looked at that then we had to figure out some way to perform. And Madison, the student who took the scene and did what a lot of German and European directors do with Jelinek, which is like, okay, here's the text. How do I stage this? I'm going to make radical cuts. But she also made a moral decision. She gave it the text is sort of this provocation, and she gave it a moral conclusion with her voice, where she was the last. So there are like four loops of six lines. Five women were speaking and one man, and she The first three loops of those lines were from Jelinek that she had taken out of the play. The last loop, where it was Me Too directed and talking to the audience to speak out and speak up, those were from Madison. And that was one of the things that made it so powerful was this horrific text and critique of things that were going on in the original play. And Madison took it and found a way to make it meaningful to her and also to make it hopeful for us as an audience.
Let me please introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I lay traps for troubadours who get killed before they reach Bombay. Pleased to meet you. Hope you get my day. Oh, yeah. But what's puzzling you is the nature of
well, but did you communicate with them the venue for what this was going to be like, who you were going to invite, all of this kind of stuff? Because if you did, yes. I would imagine that they felt the weight of that responsibility and they were like, this is on us. We can't hide. We've got to do this or not.
Right. They did. I mean, they did. They really rose to the occasion. And yeah. In terms of the medium, I said, we're going to do it on Zoom, invite people in. And then I think about a week beforehand, I said, we're going to live stream it. We're going to live stream it and then invite them in afterwards. I want to protect you. And that's something I learned from working with them. It was very clear that they needed protection, mm-hmm. essentially, from this going really, really bad and like blowing up in our face in the middle of the live performance. Yeah. And that brings me to another obstacle. Something I care very deeply about as someone who loves theater, and this is one of the main reasons I like to do it with my students, is theater is such a ontologically unique space because it's live, because mm-hmm. there's an audience, a live audience, and you're very co-present there, and you can respond to each other. And my favorite kind of theater is sort of more avant-garde theater traditions, but also sort of comedy involves really live improvisation and interaction with the audience, where as an audience member, my favorite kind of theater is one where I walk in and I'm not safe. I'm like, what are they going to do with me? When is the spotlight going to shine on me? Yeah. Or what's going to go wrong? I really like moments of authenticity in theater where things don't go wrong, don't go right necessarily.
In other words, you like awkwardness is what you like.
I like awkwardness and humor and theater in which the audience has to do something and is on a slippery ground or has to interact. It could be entertainment theater that's like that. It could be very, very avant-garde theater. And one thing that really I had to just get over was that was going to be really, really hard to do. Audience interaction in Zoom is just really difficult. Even when you're teaching a class, there's like a 3-second delay from when people speak, and reading people's reaction, reading people's faces, it just wouldn't work in the same way. But it took me I had a learning curve. It took me a long time to figure that out. I remember there's this one scene in the play, I don't know if you remember, or in the performance, the witch's kitchen got turned into a commercial for Hexen Ein's body spray. Now initially I wanted to do something interactive, and so there's this rock opera of Faust 1 and 2 from like 2008, and the Witch's Kitchen song. There's this song for the Hexen Einmal Eyes, the witch, and she's making the potion that will turn Faust young again. Recites in Goethe this poem that makes no sense about addition and subtraction and multiplication. It's this great rock song and the Faust musical. So I thought, okay, this is our chance. One of us will sing this live on Zoom, and we will make our live Zoom audience, and everyone else will do like a dance routine that the audience will have to learn and do live on Zoom, and it'll be super interactive. So my daughter and I one day during homeschooling, like listened to the song and like worked out a dance with numbers that you could show to the screen and so on. I pitch it to the class. I uploaded it on VoiceThread so they could look at it. Okay, here's the choreography. And I noticed this resistance, and I was like, no one's really excited about this. And I kind of waited, pitched it again. Resistance. And then finally I asked, so who wants to do this? No one wanted to do this. And I think it was because they intuitively knew better than I did. This will fail miserably. It will not work. It will be awkward because we are not in a physical space together. And then we were pitching commercials and then Cyril, the student, said, you know, what about, you know, hexanilamide's body spray? And then I immediately thought, okay, you guys just found the solution. That's the scene. It's a commercial for this body spray, and then Faust will tune in and use it and grow, become young. So they found the solution in a way that really protected them. And I think that's something about the space of online. I also this thought of, you know, there was this wonderful, everyone was friendly, but online is not the place. That's the place where, you know, trolls hang out. Yeah. And I think that was also in the back of our minds, right? Mm-hmm. We're performing something and, you know, we're going to become some kind of meme or yeah. I was really worried about the generosity that we would feel from the audience as opposed to a theatrical space. Cause when my students perform in the space live, it's always the most euphoric, wonderful experience. And the audience is so grateful. Mm-hmm. It turned out to be that way this time. The comments, I really liked, that was the most interactive thing we had was the rolling comments. Mm-hmm. The students, the participants were really excited to go back and watch the performance and watch the comments as they appeared, essentially. Yeah. That gave them the feedback that we didn't get when it was live.
Yeah, which, that was something that you were actually not wanting to do originally, am I correct? Like, when I remember when I was talking to you, you were wondering how we could turn that off, right?
I was worried about trolls, essentially, or people, like, not being friendly about it, but... Yeah. It ended up being exactly like it was in a live show in the sense of the goodwill that was there. Everyone who was tuning into it live really wanted to see it and really appreciated what we were trying to do.
The most pristine of science.
This podcast is a production of the Teaching and Learning Team at the College of Charleston. I'm Dr. Michael Overholt, director and producer. Farewell, friends.